morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to what's going to need to be the fastest growing segment of our society, if it isn't already. To those of you like me who know that there's something troubling, something especially destructive about the religious and political institutions, the media, the military invasions that the United States continues to sponsor, as well as all of the economic woes and schemes that are plaguing our planet. Eventually, we've come to realize that these institutions that Americans have rallied around for so many years are not part of the solution because they are, in fact, the problem. It doesn't matter how many times we reorganize the deck chairs, we change from blue chairs to red chairs. The problem only gets worse. We vote for change we can believe in, and all we get is an acceleration of the existing pattern. One more election isn't going to change anything. We have to change. So instead of merely presenting the news on this program, our mission will be to understand who is causing the great tragedies that are besieging our planet, why they're doing it, all while encouraging everyone to look inside and to see if they are willing to change so that they no longer rally around such foolishness. And that is why during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, something remarkable, through evidence and reason. Yes, indeed. Since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable opportunity that exists in our world today. He wields His words wisely, providing answers for everything that ails us. And on this program, we're going to try to do the same, because it is words, not bullets and bombs, not economic strategies, not religious platitudes, particularly not political pontifications, that can resolve the issues, everything from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. Our number, if you'd like to participate anytime over the next 2 hours in this program, toll free, 877-300-7645. I missed the author of the statement that it's not sufficient to send a strong message to Assad, because Scott and I were talking about other issues. But when did sending a message entail bombs? Are we so deficient in our words that our words no longer carry any clout? Have we become so decadent, so immoral, so hated around the world that we've lost the moral high ground and therefore we are no longer seen as an exemplar? We are no longer seen as a nation of reason. Have we lost the ability to effectively convince people to do the right thing through reason and evidence, through our words? The moment that you have to return to military strikes to solve everything that you don't like, you've lost it. There are not enough bullets and bombs to kill everyone that you oppose. And every time you drop a bomb, as the United States is still poised to do, you manufacture 100 enemies for everyone you kill. It is always counterproductive. You breed hate. You bring death. It is destructive. It is not a means of resolving anything. Americans have really gotten into a rut in terms of their inability to see their actions in context, nor even evaluate the consequences of what they do. We've lost the ability to see how a speech at Al Jazeera University regarding Muslims not being at war with the United States and America never being at war with Islam, both of which are lies by this president, speaking of the great achievements of Islam, which is also a lie, encouraging Muslims to rise up, and they did. There was an Islamic Reformation, and we're paying the price for that today. But that Islamic Reformation that we let out of the bottle cannot be suppressed with weapons of war. It craves war. Yes, I know that so many conservative talk radio programs, and are they all not conservative, say that that's all these goons know is force. So let's show them what they know. Now, force is what they crave. The moment we stoop to their level, we are no better than they. What we needed to do immediately after 9/11, when we started down the wrong path because Americans thought that a nation has to respond when something bad happens and that response must punish someone. The moment we headed down that wrong path, we lost the opportunity to resolve the problem with words. And that was the solution. We could have resolved the issue using our minds, using our rhetoric. It was easy. Immediately after 9/11, I wrote a book called Tea with Terrorists, included in it the three-step plan that we could use to resolve the threat of Islamic terrorism in less than 6 months. That was 12 years ago, almost 13 years ago, but now, and it was straightforward. Do these three things, the threat of Islamic terrorism goes away, and America is back on the track to have economic independence, opportunity. But no, we chose to ignore the consequence of our actions, not to look at anything in as a whole picture, and instead to lash out with bullets and bombs. We invaded Afghanistan, even though Al-Qaeda was not the responsible party for 9/11. That plan had been conceived in the Philippines by Ramzi Youssef. He was already in custody, and we knew about his plans, precisely what Muslims were going to do 5 years before it happened. But instead, we lashed out at Afghanistan as if Afghanistan had something to do with this. You know, doing the wrong thing is not better than doing nothing. Doing the right thing is always the right choice, but we chose to do the wrong thing, and we invaded Afghanistan, and it became another Vietnam. You can't tell the good guys from the bad guys. We propped up one of the most disgusting governments in world history. Americans died being killed by the people they were there to free. The moment we leave, it will be as if we had never been there. We stay to honor the deaths of those who have gone before, only allowing more to die in a war that we know cannot be won. And all the while, we pushed the most fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, while we bribed Pakistan with ever more money to give lip service to the notion that they are on our side when, in fact, the Taliban is one of their agencies. And they are a nuclear country. What we did in Afghanistan was suicidal. And we made the same mistake in Iraq. We invaded Iraq because Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. Yep, he had gassed some of his people, the Kurds, because the Kurds were trying to play both sides against the middle. Can't blame them. They are the real Palestinians of the world. They're a people with a national racial heritage that have been abused by Muslims the world over for hundreds of years. And they were playing both sides against the other, and Saddam Hussein was not about to tolerate treason in his own country when he was in an all-out war with Iran. And then we lied about Iran having chemical and biological weapons. Weapons of mass destruction, we called them. And we took Colin Powell out before the United Nations. And he made this great dog and pony show using PowerPoint presentations, as do so many bureaucrats in the U.S. government. And everything he said, every bit of evidence, all of the credibility of the U.S. spying capabilities, our satellite imagery, our NSA listening capabilities, every bit of it was a lie. Everything the man said was untrue, and we justify going to war in Iraq, making a horrible situation there infinitely worse, based on a pile of lies. The President of the United States joined in the fray. He knew at the time he had been told both by Britain and by the director of the CIA that the yellowcake uranium purchase from Niger did not occur, that it was fabricated by the Shias, turns out, in hopes that the United States would invade and give them Iraq. He lied, justifying his desire to invade Iran. 10,000 Americans died as a result of his lie. That makes him complicit in murder. Yeah, if you think that Obama is bad, George Bush was still worse. 1 million people died as a result of our invasion. We squandered $6 trillion, bankrupting the country for our children. And we made a bad situation worse. The reason that there is a bloody civil war that has led to the deaths of over 100,000 people in Syria is a direct result of the United States invading Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran. That is the only reason that this has occurred. So once again, we're back on the same carousel, as if we learned nothing from our mistakes. And these are not mistakes in our distant past, but in our present. And we're saying, bad, bad Assad, gasps at his people. So America needs to punish him. Let's hold him accountable. That's the American way. And it tells the American bureaucracy, tells the world and its people, we know for sure it was him that did it. Just like we told the world that we were sure that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. It was a lie then. Why is it credible now? And should it be true? Well, let's say that a rogue faction of Assad's troops actually fired some Scud missiles into a neighborhood of Damascus, 3 miles away from the presidential palace. Let's say that they were that stupid. Now that Hezbollah had entered this war and the war was essentially won, as Putin says, all of the rebel forces were now surrounded. They had been driven out of every stronghold. Now that it was over, just mopping up the details remained. Why now would Assad risk the intervention of the United States to gas people 3 miles away from the presidential palace? And even if it's true, what is to be gained? Why would the United States want to side with some of the most ruthless, despicable people in human history? Why would we want to side on behalf of the very same people who we fought and who killed us in Afghanistan and in Libya and in Iraq? Welcome back to Shattering Mess. This whole mess in Syria, well, the mess in Syria is our making. The United States invaded Iraq, gave Iraq to Iran, turned Iran's primary enemy, which was Saddam Hussein's Iraq, into Iran West. And in so doing, changed the balance of power so significantly in the Islamic world that it put the Qataris, the Kuwaitis, and the Saudi Arabians solely in opposition to the Iranians and their influence in Iraq, in Syria, and in Lebanon. And so we lit the fuse for a proxy war in Syria. And this president was not smart enough to know that ultimatums are almost always tragic. You should never give an ultimatum to your children, to your associates, to your friends, to your neighbors. The moment you give an ultimatum, then you've taken choice and reason out of the equation. Beck Scott has a comedic routine about drawing a line and creating an ultimatum. Go ahead, Scott.
Start walking, you doggone long-eared galoot.
Just a minute, partner. You can't talk to me like that. Them's fighting words.
Them's fighting words.
I dare you to step over this line.
Okay, I'm a-stepping.
I dare you to step over. This one.
Yes, indeed, he put himself in this position. So should America go to war once again because the President of the United States misspoke? Is that worth the killing and destruction that will follow? You know, there are consequences of making an ultimatum and then not acting upon it. What it does is say that when we make another statement, like, for example, that a red line for us in Iran is the development of a nuclear weapon. They're less than a year away from finishing their development of a nuclear weapon. And now Israel knows that the U.S. promised that it will not allow Iran to cross that line, that it would intervene in the case of something that does have imminent United States interests, where the war in Syria does not. Israel now knows the United States will not honor its commitment. You know, Israel doesn't want the Americans to bomb Assad. They know that the Sunni rebels are far worse than Assad, that this is a battle between two of the most repulsive and evil forces the world has ever known. And so that last thing they want is the United States to stir it up and now put the United States in a position where both sides are blaming the United States and both sides therefore would be blaming Israel. And they widen the conflict even broader than it already is. The last thing Israel wants is a conflict between Russia and the United States in Syria. It's not in their interest. But they do know, and that's the reason they've written editorials in their papers, that when you make a statement that this is a red line we will not tolerate in Syria, and you do nothing, it tells you that you would also do nothing when that red line is crossed in Iran and they complete their nuclear ambitions. Well, so what is the president doing? President Barack Obama said that chemical weapons and the attack in Syria threatened U.S. allies, Israel and Jordan. No, it didn't. It didn't. First of all, we don't even know who deployed them. And when you're dealing with a situation and you really don't know who, and I can assure you, we don't know who. We'll talk about that in the next segment as to who did this and why it is unknowable, and maybe will always be unknowable, is that the moment that the United States invades, we make everybody more vulnerable. And they all know it. Israel knows that Assad is not going to deploy his chemical weapons in Israel so long as he is winning the war. But if it's obvious that he's going to lose and that his life is in imminent danger of being snuffed out and his weapons are in imminent danger of being destroyed by the United States, he absolutely will use them. And the same thing is true with Jordan. Jordan knew that if they were seen as an ally of the rebels in this war, that the consequences for them would be grievous. Saudi Arabia was so insistent, and Saudi Arabia, because of the OPEC wealth, is a huge influence in this region. Saudi Arabia knew that the rebels were losing. And so Saudi Arabia is the nation that upped the ante. Not only has Saudi Arabia provided almost all the weapons for this fight, and provided the lion's share of the jihadists for the fight. But Saudi Arabia upped the ante and gave the rebels ever more powerful rockets and missiles. And so in so doing, they're the one that upped the ante. And so if Syria responded in this way, then the first strike was by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is outside of missile range. But Jordan and Israel, they're not. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I didn't quite complete the equation for everyone regarding Jordan, since the president has said that we ought to act because of it's in the interest of Israel and Jordan. It isn't in the interest of either of those two countries, so long as Saddam Hussein, Assad, but by the way, those guys are the same. You know, if you depose Saddam Hussein in Syria, you can look at what happened afterwards to understand what's going to happen if you depose Bashar Assad in Syria. So that slip there was very insightful for anyone who wants to understand cause and consequence. In Iran, they realized that if Saddam Hussein was deposed by the United States, that the fact that they controlled the people, the Shiites through the mosques, and that they were the majority, that they would prevail. And that as such, that it would be essentially giving Iraq to Iran. And so we deposed Saddam Hussein, made certain that he was killed, watched him crawl out of a hole, and then one person, one vote, and they voted for a government that was controlled entirely by Tehran. That was the disaster, made a bad situation infinitely worse. It's now responsible for over 5,000 Iraqis having succumbed to suicide bombers this year alone. It also raises the question, if 1,000 people or even 1,400 people, whether it's 200 or as the Doctors Without Borders suggest, or it is 1,429 as the United States insists without any means to identify the number other than cell phone videos, then we're back in exactly the same position. Why is the war that we created in Iraq with the Sunnis, these very same jihadists on the rebel side, using suicide bombs to kill Shias in mosques and marketplaces, 5,000 of them, why is that not considered a red line? Why is that not considered an immoral and barbaric strike against the most vulnerable people? Why is killing over 5,000 people this year alone in mosques and marketplaces considered okay? Something that we'll just overlook when killing 300 to 1,500 in Syria, something we can't overlook. Is a suicide bomb somehow more acceptable than is a chemical attack? Why is it then we became so riled by the bombing in Boston? Why is it we became so riled by the bombing in New York City in 9/11, which was a suicide bombing? The issue on Jordan that I promised that I would cover is that Jordan wanted to stay out of this dispute because it has no means to stand up to Syria, and it knows that its population centers are a matter of seconds away from Damascus on a chemical attack. If Assad is going to go down, he will launch his chemical-laden rockets at the population centers in Jordan, who has absolutely no way to defend its population. And it will; those rockets will bring down death in a matter of seconds. The United States invading, the United States bombing Syria is not in Jordan's interest. And the reason that Jordan now is in the crosshairs is because it violated another ultimatum. Assad told the Jordanians that, yes, we know that the Saudi Arabians are supplying all the weapons which have turned this conflict into a civil war. If you allow them to roll all of their weapons through and their trucks through to arm the jihadists, Jordan, then there will be a consequence. They did. That's when the most recent arms shipments into Syria by the Saudi Arabians supplying missiles and surface-to-air missiles as well as rockets went right through Jordan, making Jordan now a target. I'd like listeners to think about this, too. Suppose that we're in a situation in America where the Canadians decide that they want to ally with all of the Asians in America, and they want to oppose the Caucasians. And they decide that they're going to provide every weapon that they can get their hands on that they think that the Asians in America would be willing to deploy against Caucasians. And at the same time, you have the Mexicans deciding that they want to get the land that they lost to America in the Mexican-American War back, and they decide that they're going to supply anti-tank surface-to-air missiles as well as automatic machine guns and assault rifles to all the Hispanics in America. And so both of these two nations decide they're going to take their allies and they're going to weaponize the dispute, and the target's going to be Caucasians in America and the American government by arming with the most lethal weapons possible the Hispanics and the Asians against the Caucasians. What do you think you'd feel like in America? Even if you were Hispanic, you were an Asian, you were no matter. And that's exactly what happened in Syria. So for us to say that it is immoral for Syria to have hit back, when in fact that is exactly the scenario that has taken place in Syria, where outside nations have provided weapons, is losing sight of what has actually occurred. Now, speaking to a journalist in the Russian Far East city of Vladivostok, Mr. Putin urged Mr. Obama, as a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, which was such a joke in his first term, to think about the victims of Syria before using force. I love Putin. I mean, he is evil right to the core. He is an extraordinarily bad man, but he is so clever in the way that he wields his malfeasance that he's entertaining, and that's what I mean by I love him, in the sense that I love to watch his maneuvers, because the man, evil as he may be, has become so entertaining. One of the things about Putin is he has gone from being the world's pariah, on the wrong side of everything, to now he is the voice of reason. We have, it's not because Putin has grown. No, he's still an evil man. It's not that Putin has changed. He's still a fascist dictator. It's just that we in the West, particularly America, have plummeted so far, have become so grotesquely ignorant and irrational and immoral, so dishonest, that now he is the rational individual and we are the idiots. I mean, look how stupid it was for America to decide that we're going to boycott Russia, that we're going to condemn Russia of reigniting the Cold War because they wouldn't turn over an asylum seeker in Edward Snowden, and that the United States would single-handedly say we're not going to hold a summit with Putin because of Edward Snowden. And all Snowden did was reveal the malfeasance of the United States, that we were not only spying on our own citizens, but the United States was spying on all of our friends. That's all he did. And we make, that was our red line, man. If you don't turn him over to us so that we can prosecute a whistleblower that exposed our malfeasance, oh, we're not going to meet with you. Old Obama called Putin the bully who sits hunched in the back of the class, looking to swipe at him. What a stupid thing to do. And now Putin is saying, you know, we actually have boots on the ground in Syria. Our investigators went to the scene of the chemical attack right after it occurred. We didn't even need to ask permission. We found that the rockets that were used were Scuds, the same kind that the rebels have been using during the whole war. Same kind that are launched at Israel from Hamas. And we found that this sarin was of a very low cottage quality, not the quality that the Assad government would have used. We're there. But what Putin also said is, take a step back and think about this from two different perspectives, neither of which America seems to be able to do. And as a matter of fact, when I talk about either one of these two to folks, the first thing that I hear, yeah, but, you know, he is supplying the Syrian government with munitions, and therefore, what do you expect him to say? Well, that is to discount these next two statements with an ad hominem argument, because you've got nothing better. And that's a fallacy. But if supplying arms to a nation renders a nation incapable of offering thoughtful and moral advice, then the United States would be the most thoughtless and most immoral nation on earth, because we sell more weapons to more countries than everybody on earth combined. So let's think about this. He said two things. One is that the attack, the actual evidence on the ground, which they have investigated and the United States has not, because the United States has no one on the ground in Syria. No one. The Russians do. They said, we've investigated it. The quality of the sarin gas was such that it wasn't a part of Assad's arsenal, and the delivery mechanisms were crude Scuds. He then said something else that ought to have shaken America to its core, if you want to be rational. The first thing that you do is you look at who has the most to gain, who has the most to lose. based on an event. The rebels had everything to gain and nothing to lose other than the deaths of some of their citizens, which they care nothing about, by making it look like the Assad regime had gassed them. The Assad government had nothing to gain and everything to lose by actually perpetrating a chemical attack when it was obvious that they were in control of this long civil war. And under those circumstances, even if a rogue element of the Assad regime did use them, it would be stupid for us to respond. And then he said the third thing that also should have shaken America to its core. Look at what you've done. You tell me how in the world your invasion of Afghanistan has brought anything but death and destruction. You tell me how your invasion of Iraq has turned out in any way positive. What has it brought but death and destruction? You tell me how siding with the rebels in Libya turned out to be good. How is it that your bombings in Pakistan have stabilized that situation and made Pakistan a better country? You tell me how anything the United States has done in this part of the world, Putin said, has made a situation better rather than worse. And now you stand poised to do it all over again? Putin says, maybe I need to send some people with rhetoric and evidence to the U.S. Congress to awaken them to this reality. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You know you're in trouble when you have someone who is as evil, who is as counterproductive to world harmony and peace as Vladimir Putin is the voice of reason. But that's how far we have fallen. That by comparison to a man who has turned Russia into a fascist dictatorship, that by that comparison, we look like utter bumbling fools. Can't think, lost the ability to reason, no longer have grasp of the evidence, don't understand what's happening in the world, and have become the bully, the belligerent evil kid in the sand yard that everyone has grown to hate. Everything that's revealed about us now is bad. The WikiLeaks document shows that America wantingly, willingly killed Afghani civilians and filmed doing it and then lied about it. It showed that the United States State Department was almost always mocking other nations while feigning support. It showed that the United States military knew that the Afghani war was lost 6 years ago, and yet continued to engage, allowing ever more Americans to die for a lost cause. That the president is so paranoid, he started eavesdropping and tapping the telephone conversations of the Associated Press. That he is so despicable in terms of opposing his foes that he sicked the IRS after conservative organizations to spy on them. All the while, he told the IRS to treat his foundation, which his brother runs, who is a friend of the government in the Sudan, who perpetrated the greatest genocide of this generation, who is a close ally of the Muslim Brotherhood. He says, look the other way in terms of its tax status and give him favorable conditions retroactively, which they did. Grotesquely immoral on both accounts. You have this president wanting the world to believe him when he says, oh, yeah, man, we have proof that the Syrians did this. This is the same man that lied before the United Nations and blamed the attack and deaths of four Americans in Benghazi on a Christian film, calling it reprehensible. When he knew for certain that the attacks had been perpetrated by Ansar Sharia, friends of Islamic Sharia law, using weapons that the United States had indirectly supplied. The truth did not serve his interest, so he made up his own set of facts. And now this same administration is trying to justify their desire to bomb Assad on the same kind of phony evidence. Why? Because this president, in his speech at Al-Jahar University, which was the head of the foundation, really, of the Muslim Brotherhood, it's where it began, it was the source of the election of Morsi and the Islamic fundamentalists in Egypt. It unleashed the Islamic Reformation that has taken over this part of the world. He sees himself as a Sunni, as the great emancipator and leader of the Sunnis. And so, a blow against the Shiites, he views as in his legacy's interest. But why would anyone believe him? They say that the attack killed 1,429 people when Doctors Without Borders says the number's closer to 300 that died in the chemical attack. We don't have anybody on the ground there. How did we count? Do we look at the videos and say, that child looks different? Oh, that child is in a different wrapping than some other child. How is it that we are the least bit credible? We even say that Syrians had chemical weapons personnel operate in the area. Do you think that a man who is fighting to save his country is going to say, you know, the chemical weapons team that use rockets and that use artillery can't engage in the defense of Damascus, and so we're going to exclude their capability? Why just the fact that they were in the general area makes any difference? Yes, they say that we have satellite proof that Scuds were shot from an area controlled by Assad. As if in urban warfare, one side is always in wholesale control and the other side can't, as insurgents, act as well. It's just utterly insane.